I've heard this quote, which I think is partially meant to be funny, but it's also very true, which is that if you want to know someone better, you should look at their YouTube recommendations. What videos is the algorithm suggesting? And it always makes me think of my friend Jake, because one time I was at his house and we decided to look something up, and every single recommended video was related to law enforcement, which is his career field. And I thought, wow, like that's what you're looking up and researching on your own time, even after sometimes 60-hour work weeks where you're actually doing this stuff. And it was surprising, but it also kind of wasn't, because I know he loves his job, like more than anyone I know. He lights up when he talks about it. And it got me thinking, what's that about? I guess I've never really asked him where that passion came from. So I called him up.
What was your first memory of wanting to be in law enforcement?
Well, so I used to watch every Saturday night at 8 o'clock was Cops, and they would have 2 30-minute episodes. And then at 9 o'clock was America's Most Wanted, which I think was an hour. And I remember watching that at 7, and I absolutely loved Cops. I loved Cops. I thought it was so fun to watch. I thought it was so interesting. They would be out trying to find people. People would run from them. They would be like, look what I've got, these drugs, this guns. I just thought that was so, that looked like so much fun. And to be honest, it is exactly what I thought it would be. That is like the most fun. And I've tried to think about why that stood out to me so much.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I'm trying to figure out like, what is it about the, so I mean, because it's definitely like the adrenaline. It's definitely like the excitement.
For sure, the dopamine, yeah.
What, like, I'm trying to figure out what it is that made that such a great fit for you. Like,
My childhood a little bit is different. So my parents got divorced when I was 3, and my mom basically became a criminal. She just, like, moved the state away. She was into drugs. My dad was a pretty straight-edge guy. Like, he had a normal 9-to-5 job, but, like, I was raised by my dad. And then when I was, like, around that age, like probably around 7, honestly, the same time I started watching those shows, my mom came back, and then I would go see her every other weekend. And my dad just thought I was like in a good environment, but realistically I was not in good environments. But I never told him, because I didn't, one, I wanted to be around my mom. I missed my mom as a kid. But two, like, I felt so safe at my dad's house that it was like an adventure. So like we would go, he would always drop me off at my grandma's house, which was like a normal house in a normal neighborhood. And then my mom would pick me up. But my mom's weekends were crazy sometimes. I mean, I can't even express like some of the stuff that I remember being at a house, and there was like $5,000 in cash. And my mom was like, hey, go hide this. And I had to go like hide it in a room, definitely drug money. And I was like, this is so cool. I felt like I was like rich. I was counting this money. And then like, people are like, where's the money? And I'm just sitting there in silence, like a 10-year-old kid, like I'm dead silent. Oh, I've never seen any money. And then they just like move on. It's like the craziest stuff I was involved in. So I'm sure that contributed to me wanting to be in law enforcement. But it doesn't make me like want to be a criminal, I guess. I don't know. I don't know where the line is there, because I feel like a lot of kids who are in those, just that's what they grow up and they see. So they want to like get into crime. But that was never me. I'm scared to death of jail. I would literally cry my eyes out if I ever had to go to jail. So. Yeah. I do think that it contributed to it.
Do you think that helped you to frame like this? Because you had this really clear duality in your childhood. It was like,
yes.
It was like 90% of the time you were in a very like straight-laced household, and then 10% of the time you were in like this household where a lot of criminal activity was happening. I wonder if you had to compartmentalize like that is like that's not okay, and it's really black and white, and I'm seeing these bad things happen. And so somebody needs to be there, like making sure that these people are held accountable, like especially when you saw violence and things like that.
Yeah. And then like, it's a weird situation because you're throwing a kid who wasn't raised in that into that environment too. So yeah, and now as I'm older in my 30s, I don't remember a lot. I've like kind of blacked out a lot of that stuff. I mean, thank God nothing ever happened to me or I was hurt or anything like that. Because I definitely could have been. There was shootings and stuff too. Like not in the houses we were at, but nearby. Like people were getting shot. I hadn't ever seen him get shot, but like in the neighborhoods we were in, for sure there was people getting shot. I think I compartmentalized a lot of it. I really do. And you know, I've never felt like it's really affected me, but maybe getting into this field helped me kind of therapeutically see, because now I'm around it a lot with my job. I don't know.
My name is Tobin Richardson, and I'm a counselor educator with the vision to save the therapist by creating a forever free podcast style platform designed for learning. And I'm going to say something that's really cliche here, which is that we and our clients on average spend a third of our lives at work, obviously with some huge variations. And we sometimes make career decisions with very little information. And of course, these can be recipes that lead to, at least in some cases, a need for a reevaluation over time. But that reevaluation can be really complicated because of all the things that are impacted by career changes. They can take a lot of time and money and energy and can be really unpredictable. And all of that's very intimidating. So here we'll be hearing from Kaylee Wolken, who's a therapist and a career counselor who loves exploring all this stuff. She works with all types of clients to examine their careers, but one of the types of clients she enjoys working with the most is therapists, us. Here she is.
To me, this is always a really fun story because my progression just into the world of career work is probably the smoothest progression, and I don't preach that to most people. So I started in undergrad and very quickly realized, oh, psychology seems like a lot of fun. And I talk about even as a kid, I started off in like this idea of veterinary work, and it began to be, oh, I actually want to comfort people who are losing their pets. Well, that's not a vet, that's a therapist. So I went into psychology. From psychology, I went to therapy. I thought, well, of course, I'm a psychology counselor. That makes sense. And then in grad school, we did a career counseling class. I think it was required to do it, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And going through that class, I was like, man, this is so much fun. I really like this, just very concrete, but also so relevant to people's lives. And so I started to get the little bug there, but never knew it could be a full-blown kind of career path or, you know, just the sole focus of work. So fast forward, even in my internship, I did like the career outreach team at school. So I was still getting that kind of experience there. And then in private practice, I started seeing clients that one of the biggest reasons they were there was because their work was stressing them out, and dove into career counseling as a whole.
I think when we think of career counseling, at least for me, my mind still goes to like a person who lost their job and wants to go into a different mm-hmm. field, or like some mm-hmm. like kind of like dramatic job mm-hmm. shifters.
Yeah.
It sounds like maybe that's not always the way career counseling.
No. In fact, I'm working with somebody right now where they came in saying something like, you know, I'm just not sure I'm happy where I'm at, but I don't know what I would do. And in the work that we're doing, it's actually become really clear that they actually are good in the work that they're in, but some of the pieces of their work need to be adjusted. A lot of what I do is assessment. I always tell people there's a lot of good free assessments out there for clients. You don't have to have them pay hundreds of dollars to take a career test when the ones like a very common one is My Next Move on Onet's website. It's going to get the conversation started.
Whenever I talk to somebody who's in the job search process, mm-hmm. it feels like it's so often just a discouraging, again, a soul crushing process because mm-hmm. getting your hopes up a lot. There's just so many dynamics that you don't know, that don't go in a job description. Like, do you find yourself really doing a lot of work, kind of like managing the expectations and, you know, the emotions that come with career mm-hmm.
Yes. And I also, this probably comes back to psychoeducation. I will die on the networking hill when it comes to career work with clients. When I hear somebody saying, I've applied to 100 jobs, there is research out there that says 35% of those jobs are ghost jobs. They're not even real jobs. Employers put them online to basically do market research, see what kind of people are applying. And so to me, that is a really high percentage chance that you're applying to a fake job. And so networking, and we hate, it's almost like we get this response to the word networking. And so I heard somebody say it's building your professional connections. I'm like, okay, well, it's still networking. But then you know you're talking to a real person. You know that if they're talking about a job, it's a real job. And I will consistently like stand on that hill, because it really is one of those educational pieces for clients to say, hey, I know that it's so easy to just hit submit, submit, submit on the applications, but it is so much time you're spending when you could be spending that connecting with people you already know. And that's, sorry, I'm going to go a little bit further on the networking. It's not always building a new connection. Sometimes it's putting a post up on your social media account that's public that says, hey, friends and family, this is the kind of thing I'm interested in pursuing. Does anybody know anyone who has any leads? It doesn't have to be a brand new person. You can reach out to people you know too. But I think like that is such a key point in working with people, is retraining them on what it really means to apply to jobs in this day and age.
I'm also wondering about how often the career struggle maybe, or like the career issue that you're working on, really is like primarily impacted by an underlying mental health issue. Like I'm wondering, like a person who's unhappy in their job, but it's because of conflict, it's very likely to happen in another job because they don't really have like the skills to be able to, the interpersonal skills to be able, like, are there times in career counseling where you really kind of have to shift away from the career work much more heavily into the mental health exploration? Yeah.
So this is where I highly recommend, like, it depends on the situation and how you began the work with the individual. Because I actually separate the career and mental health work. And that's why I like mentioned before, I partner with therapists a lot of times where I exclusively do the career work. And when I have that kind of sense of, okay, there's a little bit extra going on here that needs to be addressed, I then both tell the client, and if I have a release, the client's therapist, I say, this is what I would recommend right here. I think it's getting in the way. And if I don't have a release, I say to the client, I say, this is something to work on with your therapist. And I get really clear and specific. You know, I have always believed that career counseling, which typically isn't insurance reimbursable, I do believe it has such an impact on our mental health that I think that they all are in there. And so to me, I kind of go the route of our work is going to impact, you know, somebody who's burnt out. And I sincerely hope burnout shows up in the next DSM. Somebody who's burnt out is going to show so many symptoms that are aligned with depression. And so then it's a question of, is this burnout? Is this depression? Like, we have to do some differential work there. And if it's burnout, you do need to treat the burnout in a way. You do need to address it, because if a person is burnt out and they think, well, I'll be okay if I just go to this new job, well, it's still there. They're still exhausted, feeling ineffective at their work and feeling more on edge and cynical. So I think that those underlying pieces need to be addressed, but it always depends on kind of what those underlying pieces are in terms of how you approach them.
Something I know you think about a lot, and me too, is burnout among therapists. Like, this is
I can talk about that all day long. Yeah.
Well, and I think
consequently, a lot of the clients I see are therapists in the career work I do. So.
Yeah. I mean, what a career we have that has potential for burnout. We just think about the emotional labor that therapists exude every single day, every single hour. How How does a therapist who comes to you and says, like, I'm burnt out, I think this is the career mm-hmm. I want to stay in.
Yeah.
I remember why I wanted to do it. And mm-hmm. maybe sometimes I still feel that, but like, I'm exhausted and I'm not sure what, like, if this is a career issue, if this is a mental health issue, mm-hmm. how do you move forward?
Yeah. So part of the first part, I always tell people, I am absolutely going to go with the flow, except for the very first part where I'm going to do some assessments, because I want to start with some measures. In that kind of information is really helpful with therapists to say, hey, look, it's not that you're in the wrong field, but it could be that we need to find some ways to refill your energy in these other areas too. I do a lot of kind of like stress assessment in the sense of what is going on in your life that is feeling overwhelming. Are there ways we can reduce that? Because if you go with the definition of burnout, it's unchecked stress, which means if you deal with the stress, then the burnout starts to kind of restore, you start to restore yourself. But you have to deal with the stress or else you're going to keep repeating it. So we talk about things like clients, because as hard as it is sometimes, like, clients are a source of stress. And so then it becomes, are there certain clients that you actually really enjoy working with, maybe because of the reason or because of the style of therapy you do in those moments? And if that's the case, how do we get you more of those people? So it almost becomes like a niching conversation. Or how do we help you reduce the stress with the clients that are a little bit heavier to carry? You don't want to transfer them, but you know that it's going to take more. How do we help you manage that better in those moments?
Yeah. So it sounds like from most of your work with therapists, there are, it's not ending in them pursuing a different career field.
No,
it's ending with finding ways to help mitigate mm-hmm. those daily stressors or challenges. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say it's 50-50. So half of the therapists I work with stay in the therapy field, but need to kind of be a little bit more strategic about their work. And half of the therapists leave the therapy field. And it's typically something still helping, but it is a different position. Like, one person went from kind of that therapy work to consulting with like school systems to kind of recommend better programming for their kids with special needs. So like, it does matter, like, what kind of drives and drains you in that space.
How often is the answer like, you need to reduce your caseload, you can't see eight clients a day?
It's actually usually not that simple. I mean, we want to say that it's just reducing caseload, but what I've found is that it's usually how the caseload is managed. And this is, I am going to give one simple thing. There have been a handful of people where a very simple solution is, how do we help you do concurrent note taking so you don't have to do it after your session? And some people that really works well for, other people, they're like, I'm not going to do that. And I always go with what a person responds with. But that's been a really simple solution for several therapists, where we've talked through, how do you approach this with your clients? How do you do it so you feel comfortable and so that you also get your note done in session when you're being paid for it and it's collaborative with your client?
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, though, because I think sometimes those little practical mm-hmm. time savers, mm-hmm. they multiply, you know, if you're multiplying mm-hmm. that times many sessions a day.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's like death by 1,000 paper cuts kind of thing.
I'm guessing that many clinicians mm-hmm. are thinking, my work is sometimes mm-hmm. draining and difficult. I think there's a difference between that and a clinician that's burnt out.
Yeah.
What's the difference? Like, how do you know when you've really reached that, like, mm-hmm. like that burnout point? Mm-hmm.
I heard somebody say recently, I was talking to them and they said, I think most of us don't want to admit we're burnt out. So I do think it's worth going through a checklist, because sometimes we're just not admitting it. Burnout, the three key elements are exhaustion, increased cynicism, and a loss of effectiveness. You are actually start to lose your ability to do your job well. And so if those three things are happening, that's where I really recommend you check in with kind of somebody who can help you with the burnout. Yes, our job is exhausting. And I would say that being tired from your job is being different than being burnt out from your job. If it's exhausting, it's kind of in that like yellow zone of, hey, maybe we need to change some things, but you're not at the like crisis response stage of it all. And so then it's probably a little bit easier to build the systems in place. If somebody's tired from their job a day, then it could be, okay, this was just a really heavy day. But if it's consistent and they're getting like the Sunday scaries or whatever going into the next day, that's where I want to know a little bit more about how we can change things more permanently.
Can you talk about when a client comes in for career counseling? What is the logistics of the way that relationship unfolds? How long are they typically seeking your services? Like, if you can paint the picture of like your typical career counseling client, which I'm sure doesn't exist.
I'm like, well, I've ranged from four sessions to a year. So if a person comes in, I think there's two things I would say. One, a therapist needs to check in with kind of that burnout piece that I think is very not easy. I don't want to say easy. Like, it's a really important factor to address. And if you look at it in terms of stress management, how do we address stressors in your life? How do we help you navigate these better? That is something I think can be separated to a degree from the career work. I am going to say that career work has a lot of training to it. So if it feels remotely scary, or I don't know that I can do all of this in a session, it's good to partner with somebody who does the career work. I think it's very reasonable to do a partnership with a career counselor and say, hey, I've got the therapy piece. Can you do this career piece with my client? And then it's a very clear set of goals. It becomes, you know, we might assess for what are some good career paths for you, or what's happening in your existing career. The three tests I usually do are the My Next Move, a work values assessment, which is just kind of showing, do you prefer jobs that give you achievement, jobs that have good work settings? Like, what is it that you value most in your job? And the Spark type, which was developed in 2018. It's a newer test out there, and I don't think it's recognized by like the NCDA or places like that. I wish they would. It's a solid test. But it speaks to kind of what motivates us, where we thrive in our work. Typically, if we're a good problem solver, then it says, hey, maybe you're a scientist, that you just thrive in the situations where you just get to solve a problem. But that kind of information is really helpful because it teaches you as a therapist or your client, these are the things that are going wrong in my work, and this is how I can make some adjustments. And then from there, it becomes some of the work of, what do we do now? Do we need to look for a specific type of job? Okay, you found a specific type of job. Now, what do we need to do to the technical stuff, the resumes, the cover letters, the interviewing, and all of that? So start to finish, it can depend on how long that process takes. But I would say that there's probably those four or five steps in the process: the assessment, the finding the job path that they want to take, the completing the documents needed, the interviewing, and even the networking, and then into the interviewing too. So my go-to recommendation is to go to the National Career Development Association's website, which is ncda.org. And they have a course called Facilitating Career Development that you take. It is, fun fact, if you need CEUs, it counts as CEUs for your counseling license. But it is, now I'm trying to remember if it's 30 or 60 CEUs. It's a lot. But it's a course you take. It's like a college course. You basically go through career theory, ethics, working with clients of varying demographics, and all of these pieces, including the trainings on resumes and all of that. That credential is only available to licensed counselors. So I like to clarify that. There are other credentials in their system. Like if you're not a counselor, you can be a certified career services provider. Mine is a certified career counselor, but again, that's only for counselors. So like there are some different options there, but that's the place I always recommend going to. I think I just want to encourage therapists that like the world of career work, I think a lot of therapists are either scared of it or they're like, oh, that's not for me. But I think that it's going to be something that continues to grow as a need in our like world around us, because so much of people's lives are built around their jobs now. And so I would encourage any therapists who are interested to look more into it. Definitely need more people in the career field. Every time I say, hey, this is what I do, I get at least 5 therapists to say, oh my gosh, I've had so many clients where I've needed that help. I'm like, well, here I am.
The way Kaylee talked about and framed career counseling was really refreshing to me, because it didn't focus on the high stakes of the relationship or the pressure or the idea that there's like a perfect career out there for the client and it's up to us to ultimately get them there. It was much more exploratory and nuanced and focused on self-discovery and empowerment. As you heard, she really values the early assessments that can be done in career counseling. She takes them really seriously. But it's because she saw this as a productive step in guiding a conversation. In the conversation and self-analysis, that was where the good stuff happened. Again, because career decisions are just so complicated. Even if someone is a perfect fit for a career on paper, what if that doesn't align with their lifestyle or values? Or what if that doesn't support them financially in an adequate way? And the calculus of all those variables is more than the numbers on an assessment. My favorite part of our conversation was talking through burnout. I think it's a very real problem facing those in many professions, including ours. But much like with career exploration itself, just because we have the information, just because we know about self-care and boundaries and peer support and all those buzzwords around the topic, it doesn't necessarily mean we're able to implement those strategies in a way that works. Because again, there's just so many variables that can sometimes make those things feel impossible or actually be impossible. I really loved when Kaylee discussed how even among her therapist career counseling clients, many want to stay in the field. They just want to do it in a way that feels less exhausting and leaves more in their tank at the end of the day. And there can be options to do that, but they may require taking chances that may or may not pay off. Of course, no one has the answer, because the answer doesn't really exist exactly. But I do hope that we can continue the conversation and to advocate for and support each other as a profession in all the ways we can.